Carjack Pod.
Hi, RJ.
Glad to be here tonight. Welcome, if anybody's new in the rooms. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to every decision you've ever made has put you into the seat where you are sitting right now. It's not by accident. It's not her fault, his fault, kid's fault, judge's fault. It's you. You know, my wife's on here right now. She's the one with the two kids, the one jumping on the couch in the background, and the one waving. She's like, what are you going to say tonight? And I'm like, I have no idea. In fact, I haven't been like a speaker at a meeting since like 2019, fall of 2019. And that was like surprise speaker at a retreat. It's like 100, 150 guys from my old home group in Southern California. They tell you right before the meeting starts what your role is there. And so I didn't have time to be nervous. But tonight, for some reason, I was a little nervous thinking about what I'm going to talk about when I was rereading my text 30 to 45 minutes. I can sit in a meeting when I'm only supposed to share for 5 and go for a good 10, no problem. But hitting 30 to 45 minutes, you know, and on my way over here, I was trying to think about something I was going to say, and then I was too worried about the fog and the people zooming in or out around me, so I was just concentrating on driving, and I had no idea where I was going. And and this is going to kind of just whatever comes out of my mouth, I guess, is what God is going to intend to come out of my mouth. You know, I guess I'll start from the beginning. I grew up in a small town. If you guys think Hanford, Visalia, Tulare is small, you're wrong. I'm from Mammoth on the other side of the Sierras over there. It's a town of like 3,000 people, one high school. My graduating class was 72. So when I say I'm from a small town, I'm from a small town. I have wonderful parents. They weren't not divorced. They've been together forever. I have two amazing sisters. All of my needs were met when I was a kid. For that matter, all of my wants were met. Like, literally all of my wants. I wanted a toy. I got a toy. There wasn't like, oh, no, you just got a toy. My wants were met. And I grew up with two older sisters. One went off to college when I was about 5 or 6. So I don't really remember too much of her making mistakes. But I have a sister who's a year and 22 days older than me. And she made all of the mistakes. So I knew exactly what not to do growing up. And so that came to everything. And I know a lot of people are like, you mean you knew how to get away with it? And I was like, no, I was too chicken shit to get in trouble because I've seen my dad angry, you know. So I just didn't do any of that kind of stuff. In fact, I went through a large portion of my life without drinking. When I was a freshman in high school, very close family friend, they were driving to Southern California to pick up their oldest daughter, who was best friends with my oldest sister, and they were struck and killed by a drunk driver on 395, and it killed him and his parents. And so from that moment, I kind of equated alcohol as this, like, evil thing. That was my freshman year. I didn't pick up a drink at all through high school. I was scared of it. Like I said, I equated it to death. I had this big fear of what alcohol could do, and in a small town, a lot of people, that's all they do in high school is drink. And so I got to see a lot of other people make mistakes. And like I said, my sister, she was one of those people that made a lot of mistakes and got in lots of trouble. And so I stayed clear of that. I didn't have a lot of friends in high school. I had like two very close friends. I was good at sports, which I guess would make you popular in a school. But remember, in graduating class, 72, so like I've known everybody since we were raised. Pick up a drink and do any sort of drugs, smoke a cigarette or anything through high school. You know, and I got to college and I played football in college. I went to a school in Southern California, and I enjoyed that. And again, I didn't drink for my first couple years in college. So I'm about a couple months away from 21, and I had my first drink of alcohol. My first experience of alcohol, I would assume, was like a lot of people's first experience. I was the sober driver for the Tim McGraw concert. And I drove everybody home, and they were like, oh, you got to have a drink. And they pass a bottle of vodka, not knowing how to drink, right? Only things I've seen from movies. I just took as much of it as I could, and I woke up the next morning. That was the last thing I was taking a drink, and I was sick as hell. I was throwing up in the house I was staying at. They were all leaving. The family was getting on an airplane and flying away, and here I am in a city in San Francisco, essentially where I was, not where I went to school, and I felt like hell, and I did what any adult would do at that point. I called my parents crying with my first hangover, and they drove from Mammoth over to San Francisco, and we hung out in San Francisco for the weekend. And that was my first experience drinking. So I don't want to say and give the assumption that my drinking was like that every time, right? Like every time it was blackout. I learned a very big lesson that night. Don't drink vodka. Like that's, you know, I learned that big lesson, and I didn't start drinking nightly, but I did start drinking a little bit more, and I had my 21st birthday, and I went to Las Vegas, and I had a great time there, and nothing crazy outside of what you would anticipate a college kid going to Vegas with his friends, you know. And I came back, and if I wanted to have a Jack and Coke, I had a Jack and Coke. If I wanted to have I would always buy Miller Lite. I'd have a Miller Lite. I hated beer, but I'd have a Miller Lite. I was Robin Hood. If I wanted to have one drink, I hit that target every single time. In the beginning. And then something happened in 2006. I studied abroad. And I think my alcoholism skyrocketed because of a trip. Or I don't want to say my alcoholism. The beast came out on that trip. That's where I learned what drinking could really do for me. Because before, I just did it kind of like, oh, you know, I'm just going to have a few drinks. We're going to have a good time. We're watching football. We're doing this, right? It was only for occasions. I studied abroad, and it became like, I told you guys I didn't have very many friends. I had lots of friends when I drank abroad. And I drank a lot of alcohol. I remember, I came to one night, one morning rather, I'm in a suit, a white suit, and I came to in the morning in the gutter in front of the university to my professor being like, hey, RJ, what are you doing? And I'm, you know, no good excuse, and just covered in dirt in a brand new white suit. And I guess I slept outside. I'm assuming I slept outside. I really don't know. But what I realized alcohol could do for me at that point in my life is it can make me be whoever I wanted to be. And I wanted to be light. I wanted to be cool. And I wanted to be something that I wasn't. Like I said, I went through life not having, like, with all of my needs met and all of my wants met. I grew up very fortunate. Not that my family was, my parents were wealthy, but my grandmother was exceedingly wealthy. And I made mistakes on that trip that went unchecked, like she didn't care. I'll say this now. I spent $13,000 a night on alcohol in a club, and she didn't bat an eye and didn't say shit. She told me money grows on trees, right? And I didn't have any consequences, and so it was on. And it was on for me when I got back. I was no longer Robin Hood. I don't know who I was. If I wanted to have one drink, I had six. If I wanted to have six drinks, I had 20. I lost control at that point. And I moved back to Mammoth after I graduated. I worked on the mountain, and I was spending, and I don't say this is, this is part of my story, and it feeds into how I hit my bottom. I was spending on the weekends, Friday, Saturday night, I was spending about $2,000 a night at a club in Mammoth. And again, it went unchecked. I don't give a shit is what I got from my grandma. And I also had my dad. It was like, if she didn't want you to spend it, she'd take the credit card away. You know what I mean? My dad wasn't like, it was his mom, right? So he knows. He was the kid that would crash their Porsche when he was in high school and park it in the garage and just not come home for a week. You know what I mean? That was my dad. And so it kept fueling and fueling. Eventually what happened was, I actually have no idea why. I was at my last day of work on the mountain. I went to hide a club and had a normal drinking night. I was kicked out by 9 p.m. And I called my mom to pick me up. I was just talking about this, and I don't see Colleen right now. I was just talking about this. My mom picked me up. She was telling me that she picked me up at the a little local library. I don't know what the hell I was doing at the local library, but that's where she picked me up. And I went home. I brushed my teeth, and I went to bed. I woke up a few hours later crying and went up to her room and said, I can't stop drinking. I think I'm an alcoholic. And she said, oh, okay. And didn't really know what to do with that and told me to go back to bed. I woke up the next morning and she had already called in a doctor that from our town, and he's like, hey, I sent my daughter to Betty Ford. I sent my daughter here. I sent my daughter to Cry Help in Los Angeles, and none of that kept her sober. She went down Alcoholics Anonymous, and she's got a little bit of time. And so my parents, 2 days later, sent me to Southern California, and I lived with my grandmother. I lived on Balboa Island in Newport Beach, a house away from the bay there, and she accepted me and brought and said, you can live here, but you gotta do some things different. And I said, okay, and I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I told you that doctor's daughter had been sober, and so she drove from L.A. where she was living to take me to her first meeting, and she knew some people in Newport that she had gone to rehab with years prior to take me to a meeting, too, and I went into my first meeting, Friday Night Rebels, Heliotrope in Corona Del Mar, and I don't know what you guys pictured Alcoholics Anonymous your first time, but I've seen a lot of SVU, Law and Order, and so I was picturing that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm picturing, like, the people you don't want to be around. Like, that's what I thought. Like, I'm going to this meeting with these two blonde girls being like, this is going to be super awkward. Are you sure this is safe? And I show up to a church, and it's a beautiful church, and I walk inside, and it's nothing like I expected. Were there people that look like they were in the SVU episode? Absolutely, but I'll touch on that a little bit later. And I sat in that meeting scared as hell, and I listened to every word they said in that meeting, and I said, nope, not me, fuck you, I'm out of here. Because all I got from that meeting was somebody celebrating their first birthday talking about how they were shooting dope with a horse syringe into their neck. And I'm like, maybe, just maybe, if I get to that point, I'll come back and hang out with you guys. Because, like I said, I'm a pure alcoholic. I've smoked cigarettes a handful of times. I've never smoked weed. I couldn't tell you what cocaine looks like. I don't know anything about that lifestyle. So when I got to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and I heard people talking about that, I was like, this is not the right place for me. And again, I heard people that I just wanted nothing to do with. In particular, there was this one kid, his name's Austin, and he was in that meeting and he was wearing this bright orange beanie and he was laughing and joining, and he was with Jordan, who took his year, and they were having a great time laughing. And I pointed out at Austin and I said, I hate that kid. Why is he laughing? This isn't funny. What the hell is his problem? Mind you, I didn't say a word during that meeting, but that's all I could think about during that meeting. I left that meeting. Jordo took his birthday, and Austin came up to me because they knew the person in Newport, and they were like, oh, you should come to these other meetings. And I'm like, I don't know. But the girl I knew from Mammoth, her dad was the doctor. I wanted to hang out with her. And she said, you should keep going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. So I was like, okay, I'll keep going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I didn't go for the right reasons in the beginning. However, I started going to meetings. I'm not going to say I loved them. I used to go to the 6:30 roundtable meeting in the morning in Newport on 32nd Street. I'd get there at 6:35. It was an hour meeting, and I would leave at 7:31. I showed up late. I sat in the back, and I left as soon as we dropped our hands, I was out the door. And I didn't like it. I couldn't relate because I was too busy building up barriers between me and you guys. I didn't want to relate. I didn't want to, in the beginning, be an alcoholic. But something happened. I was told, hey, you should look into getting a sponsor. So I was like, okay, whatever that means. So I go up to this kid, Jordo, who had just taken his year, and I'm like, hey, Jordo, I'm told I need to get a sponsor. And he's like, hey, see that kid Austin over there? He's the one that had the orange beanie on. He's like, he'll sponsor you. And I was like, great. And we went to a small little coffee house on Newport Beach on 31st Street, I don't know, called Alta. He was like, I didn't drink coffee at this time. And he ordered me a spiced chai vanilla latte, and I'm like, man, I fucking hate this kid even more. You mean I'm gonna drink this with you? And he sets it down there, and he's like, all right. He's like, you should try it. And I'm like, I hate chai. I hate this. I take a sip, and I'm like, fuck you. I love it. You know what I mean? Like, I hate you. And that was the first moment I had in Alcoholics Anonymous, not in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, where I actually sat and I related to somebody, because he just started sharing. I didn't know what to say. He's like, tell me about you. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And he said, good enough. And we just talked. And he said, he told me, he goes, if you want me to be your sponsor, you gotta do things. And I said, okay. And he goes, no, you have to do things. And I'm not one of those people that like tiptoes in. I'm like, if you're going to tell me to do something, I'm going to do it. And so, I mean, I jumped in, head first. And when he told me to write, I wrote. And he said to do X, Y, and Z, I did it. We did our third step in the Taco Bell drive-through line as people are honking. And he's like, I don't give a shit. And I'm like, we need to go. And he was like, no, you never have to apologize for your relationship with your higher power. And that's why we did it right there. You know what I mean? As people were honking and that, like, he was letting me know. And mind you, that I'm 24 at the time and he's like 19, right? So it's like the wealth of knowledge, not really, right? Whatever his sponsor did with him, he did with me. Monkey see, monkey do. And I just did Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps. I did them all. He said, write a list. We did, when it got to, everybody gets, has a hard time with like the, you know, the fourth step. And he made it really simple for me. He's like, we're going to do it out of the big book, but all I want you to do is write all the people you hate. Tell me what they did and then what it affected. And that's all I had to do. I didn't even have to do the fourth column by myself. I didn't have to do it by myself. I got to sit down with him, and he got to help me look at all of my part in it, because I didn't see a lot of my part in anything. I thought I was a victim. And he explained to me, it's a good thing I'm not the victim. It's a good thing that it is my fault, because I can't change what anybody else is going to do to me, but I can change what I'm going to do, the actions I'm going to take. And he was letting me know, like, there's power in knowing it's your fault that all of this happened, because you can change you. And I, like I said, I did Alcoholics Anonymous. I started going to meetings. I shared in a meeting. Mind you, I don't have a year yet, but I'm sharing in a meeting, and I was angry for some reason in the meeting, and I got up there and I'm like, all you guys talk about how welcoming you are. You guys are all full of shit. None of you come up to me. And then like the next person that spoke was like, why don't you try leaving right after the meeting again? You know what I mean? It just kind of called me out on my bullshit. It's like, no, dude, that you have to meet us halfway. Like, I'm not going to come up, like, you have to do something too. I won't say I took that immediately, because I it didn't turn me off from the program, but I just was like, yeah, I'm still not comfortable with that, right? I don't have this liquid lubricant that makes me be whatever I want. So socially, I'm still super awkward. So I have my sponsor, I have his buddy Jordo and his roommates, and the girl who 13th stepped me into this program. What ended up happening is right around after a year, me and this girl, when we were dating, I flew her to New York for her birthday. And it was going to be this romantic trip, and it was going to be great. It was going to be awesome. And she broke up with me as soon as we got off the airplane in New York. and that's not a joke, and it's not funny, Sammy. it was hurtful. But I tell you, that's the best thing that ever happened to me, because I did what anybody would do. I went into the bathroom, called my mom. It's just like, what the fuck are you calling me for? Because she now goes to Al-Anon, right? So the codependency thing, she's like, call your sponsor. I'm like, great, mom. So call my sponsor. He doesn't pick up. I get his roommate, and he's got wonderful advice. He's like, put that bitch on an airplane and send her home, right? And I'm like, I don't think I can do that. My sponsor hears that at the house, grabs the phone, and is like, no, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And so I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in New York, and I'm not going to say we didn't hang out on that trip. We did. We went to some plays and stuff I had already paid for, but I went to a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings by myself. And it was amazing because, like I said, I had only ever really worked this, just done the steps. I was only working the steps. I wasn't doing all the other AA aspect. There was no fellowship. And because of that, I got into the fellowship in a city 3,000 miles away from where I was comfortable. And as soon as I got back from that trip, I just dove straight into the fellowship, and I wasn't in a relationship with anybody, and all I did was start hanging out. I go to our Wednesday night young people's meeting, and we'd come back and have family, we called it family dinner, and it'd be like 10 of us, and we'd just eat spaghetti every Wednesday on the porch of, or balcony of this duplex, and I just started allowing Alcoholics Anonymous to really start getting a hold of me and my life. And And things really started to change. I am going to rewind back a little bit. By my year, I had completed all of my steps. I was sort of dabbling in 12. I hadn't sponsored anybody yet, but I want to go back to the amends. So I mentioned my grandma didn't care that I spent money, but my sponsor did. and I had to make amends to that. And it wasn't like, hey Nance, I'm sorry. It was like, hey Nance, my sponsor made me get this job at this little pizza place, and I have to give my paychecks to you. And that's what I had to do. So I worked at a pizza place, and I handed my checks over, and my grandma knew my bank account, so she would take it. I would hand it to her. She would just deposit it into my bank account, and it started to upset her, and so I didn't end up having to pay the full amount of money back. I would still be paying that off if I had to, but I got to take action and do that and correct some of my wrongs or attempt to. And I'd say for a good 6 months to 8 months, every paycheck, even because it didn't matter if she said no, I had to leave it somewhere for her. And then my sponsor eventually, after having a conversation with my grandmother, was like, all right, it's going to cause more problems if you continue to do this. But I will say, moving forward in my life, well, I'll talk about that later. In the time from when I got sober in 2010 to the next 2 years, I'd accomplished a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd worked all my steps. I stayed sober for 2 years. I went back to school and graduated. I got my master's degree, all because I was able to stay sober and not drink. Like, I did school really well. Like, really well. When I did school the first time, I did not do it really well. Like, I was lying to my professors and, like, tugging on the strings. Like, I knew he was having a hard time going through a divorce with his wife, and his young son was having problems, so I would lie to him and be like, oh, my dad came in and I had to go surfing with him. You know, I love my dad and I miss him because he's not here, and he'd let me get away with stuff. Like, I'm, like, lying to him. Like, but I didn't have to do that when I got sober. Like, school, it wasn't easy for me, but I was able to do it. So fast forward to year two, right? So at the end of year, the second year, coming up on my third year, like I said, I'm dabbling in sponsorship. What time is it? How much faster do I have to go? Okay. I'm dabbling in sponsorship, and then I get my first sponsee, and we start working the steps, and he's just like me. It was like a miracle, right? Like, somebody that's never done drugs before. Like, I found somebody that, like, can super relate to me. 2 weeks later, he was shooting heroin. And that is not a lie. I'm like, holy hell, I'm the worst sponsor in the world. I took a pure alcoholic and he's shooting dope. Never doing this again. And my sponsor was like, it's not your job to keep people sober. It's your job to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's like, because you can never count on a sponsor to keep you sober. Like, it's just not going to happen. The sponsor is just supposed to guide you through the steps. And so I kept sponsoring, and I really enjoyed sponsorship. And I worked with a lot of guys in Southern California. That brought another level to my sobriety, working with other people. When you get sober, a lot of times people will say to you, like, man, you've changed a lot, or, like, look at you, and you don't notice it. Like, I'd never noticed it. I never noticed it in myself, but watching somebody else go through the steps, you can see a change in them. Not just physically, but, like, mentally and spiritually and all these kind of things. It really does something for your program. Like, it gives you this whole other level to Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new in here, like that's where we're, that's where you're going towards, right? Like, there's a lot of people that I've come across, especially when I was in Southern California, because there's so many rehabs in there, and I'd be working with guys, and they'd be like, you know, I've done Alcoholics Anonymous, it hasn't worked for me before, and I'm like, oh yeah, really? What step did you get to? I got to like 5 or 6, and I look at them like, you didn't fucking do Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is 1 through 12, keep going. If you have not done all 12 steps, you have not done Alcoholics Anonymous, don't say you've done Alcoholics Anonymous, and don't say this shit don't work.
Amen.
All you have ever done is 1, 2, 3, get the fuck out. 1, 2, 3, get the fuck out, right? And sorry for my language, but Alcoholics Anonymous is the 12 steps. So if you're sitting in here and you're like, I've given this a shot and it hasn't worked, and you haven't done all 12 steps, you haven't done Alcoholics Anonymous yet. And that's what my first sponsor and my second sponsor really drove home to me, is like, you have to work with other people. Like, that is key to this program. And like I said, my first sponsor said, a sponsee can never keep you sober. And he always point me to the big book, and he'd say, you know, nothing can like guarantee your sobriety, except like, I don't know how it's worded, but it's like, continuous work with another alcoholic, something like that. And it's like, it's started, I don't know what chapter it is. I think it's working with others probably. But that's how I can be sure that I have a little bit of protection from that first drink, is by working with other people. You know, I'll fast forward a little bit. So my wife's on there. There she is. Hi, Colleen. There's my daughter, Lucy. My son, Ricky. Yes, my kids are Ricky and Lucy. It's not a joke. There's my son right there. He's probably watching Transformers or something. But we were coming up on 7 years of marriage, something like 7 years. Feels like day one, hon. I love you. I hope it's 7 years. She'll let me know as soon as I get home. But we've been married for 7 years. And, you know, with 7 years of sobriety, 7 years of sobriety, I think, we moved from Orange County to Hanford. Don't ask why, but we did. And it was supposed to be a short-term move, and it hasn't been. But I will tell you, the first thing I did when I got here is I did what my previous sponsors had always told me to do, which was get into Alcoholics Anonymous and do Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to the noon meeting in Hanford behind the McDonald's there, and somebody was talking to me before the meeting, and then I shared in the meeting because somebody called on me, hey, the new guy, and I'm, you know, I have 7 years and I'm sharing about this. And I walk outside afterwards, and a gentleman who drives a small little white truck looks at me and he says, nobody gives a shit what you say. We only care about what you do, okay? I don't care. And I was like, oh, okay, that's nice, right? But it meant something to me, because it's the truth. It doesn't matter how much time of sobriety I have. My first sponsor always used to tell me, you know, last night's campfire doesn't keep you warm tonight. So it doesn't matter what you did yesterday or you did the day before. You need to keep doing Alcoholics Anonymous. So I went to the world-famous Friday night men's meeting, and I showed up to my first meeting there. I was sitting against the window by the door, and I think Mike was the secretary at that time, and he's like, we need a coffee, somebody to do coffee. And this is my first time at that meeting. We need somebody to do a coffee commitment. Our coffee guy just left, and I'm sitting there like, I'm not fucking doing that. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, I'm trying to pull my arm down as that my mind's telling me not to do it. And, you know, I did the coffee there, and that got me plugged in. And, you know, all the guys would go to dinner afterwards. And, you know, they'd have some fellowship afterwards. And I learned something really early in sobriety, was you're always invited in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no, like, cool groups, right? Like, I always thought you had to be invited to go to dinner afterwards or invited to go get coffee. I heard where they were going to dinner, and I just fucking showed up. And that's the truth. I just showed up. I didn't care. Because that's what I was taught. You know, that if I want to be part of, I be part of. And so I just showed up. They said something about Ryan's. And I'm like, what's Ryan's? So I'm like, you know, on my Google machine here, and I found Ryan's. I show up, and they're like, hey, RJ. And I sat down, and I've been going out with them ever since. And, you know, that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have done that my first couple of years of sobriety because I was very introverted. But Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to just be like, I want to stay sober. Like when I look there, like there's my wife and my, like I said, my daughter and my son. There's a dog that can't walk who just tore both of, the dogs don't have ACLs, but tore both of those ACLs that she doesn't have. And I want to be sober for them. I want to drive home tonight sober, knowing that if they need me, I can be anywhere at any moment, and I don't have to worry about whether I've had a couple drinks or not. I don't want my son to grow up being like, oh, it's okay to be like this. It's okay to do what dad was doing. You know, I talk about my grandmother paid for everything of mine, like everything when I got out of high school and moved to Southern California to go to school. Everything. Like, I wanted a car. I got a brand new car. Oh, I don't want this. I got a truck, right? Oh, I want a Sally Mustang. You know, like, all, like, she did all of that. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of sobriety and taking a little bit of responsibility, I'm fully self-supporting. I don't take money from anybody. I've bought two cars on my own without the co-signers. Well, my wife and I are on the cars. But that doesn't need to happen anymore, and I haven't had to take money from anybody or spend anybody else's money since I've gotten sober. You know, I've been completely self-supporting, and it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I know I'm getting a little all over the place right now, but I don't know if there's anybody new here. But this program and people say that what I'm about to say in a few different ways. You know, this program isn't for people that like want it. Like, oh, I want to get sober. It's not for those people. It's not for the people that need to get sober. That guy you see when you drive down the street sleeping next to the shopping cart under the tarp. That's not who this program's for. This program's only for the people that do it. It doesn't work for anybody else. If you don't do this, if you don't do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you're not going to get this program. And I hit on 9 because where I got sober in Southern California, they are really big on all of the steps, but the amends is like a huge thing, like a huge piece of it. Like you make amends with, like I know people that went to jail because of their amends. They 6 months sober because of, I know multiple people that have had to do that. They're huge on their amends, right? Like I had to make amends to a person I didn't even know. I knew her nephew. I was at her house one time, and I had to make amends. Not everybody goes to a 5-year-old's birthday party, gets insanely drunk, hospitalized by noon, and is stripped naked walking through a 5-year-old's birthday. But I made amends to that woman, and I didn't even know her name. I had to go to her house. I had to knock on her door, and I had to do it. And sometimes I've seen people, I'm just going to do a living amends. And I'm not saying that's wrong for all cases. But we're supposed to make amends whenever possible, except when to do so would injure others. And a lot of times, the only thing that's going to get injured in that amends process is our ego and our pride. So we just, I'm just going to do my living amends. I know somebody in this area who had a few years sober, about 3 years sober, I don't see this individual anymore, but he didn't want to make a single amends and only wanted to do living amends. And I haven't seen that person since COVID. So don't skip out on some of the steps. Don't worry about the steps. Just do the steps. And, you know, my life has been amazing, absolutely amazing because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of Alcoholics Anonymous. RJ has done nothing amazing. I just do Alcoholics Anonymous. I call my sponsor every once in a while. I go out to eat. I go to meetings. I do this when I don't want to do this. And my life just continues to get better. So I went way too long. I didn't think I could do that. I really didn't think I could go that long. But as long as I talked, I knew Chris wouldn't have an opportunity to. Thank you for having me. Thank you. That's it.
So we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many different people as possible. So we just ask you to keep that in mind when you're sharing. Limit your time, if you would, please. And we're going to turn the meeting back over to RJ to pick on people to share. And so a couple things. We are broadcasting this. We do try to engage people online to share as well. So you've got a list here of these folks. I'm going to give you this so you can see a little better. These are three folks we have hiding around the corner.
All right.
So it's nice you can see Jim, Jamie, and Sarah. And then I'm going to switch the mic a little bit here.
All right. Well, I'll start by calling on somebody in here first. Let's go with Jim L.
And Jim, give me just a quick second. Go ahead and turn your audio on. Here we go. Okay, there we go. Hey, everybody. I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, RJ, very much. Where am I at here? So I haven't shared in a while. Sorry. I'm grateful to this program. I'm so grateful to this program because I was, it sounded like a drinker like you. I loved drinking. I love whiskey. I loved grabbing one beer and then ending up blacking out because it was too much that night. And I started, a little bit earlier than you in that I found the drink in my 10th grade year of high school. And just continued it until I hit about 40, 44, I guess, actually. And, I got busted by my wife's family, and they called me out on my drinking at a wedding. And I got finally kicked out of the house, the real deal, kicked out of the house this time, because everybody knew. And that right there could be my low. The next morning, my niece called me and informed me that there's this meeting that I should go to with her that night. And she's a young one in this program. And I'm like, oh, okay, I should go with you because I'll get my family back and people will like me again. And so she took me to this meeting. Just about 7 years ago, the Sunday night meeting, and I met a bunch of you here, and I heard some amazing things at that meeting. And it was like they wrote that big blue book for me, and it just seemed normal, and like I had found a home. And I know other people, like you said, I hate this crap, but when I heard the big book being read, it was just like a miracle. Like, oh my gosh, this is so normal. That's how I feel. And this is good stuff. And, you know, I've got my family back. I've got her family back. And I guess that was one of my big, I guess, goals of this program. But the big blessing in this program is that I'm still sober today. And I can be around people who drink, and I can be at Christmas parties and Thanksgiving parties, and I don't drink. I could go to softball events, and everybody's drinking, and I don't have to drink. And I could wake up in the morning and know for, you know, 99% sure that I didn't cause any harms the night before. So I'm blessed to be here. Thank you.
I heard some of your story in our home group, of course. We belong to the same home group. What I liked about your share tonight, RJ, was it was all about action. Okay, you talked about action and service. And as far as I'm concerned, those are the two things that keep us sober. Okay, the action is actually working the steps, not talking about them. The action is actually going out the door, getting dressed, going to a meeting, going and picking somebody up that they need a ride. The service, of course, is making coffee, being a secretary, sponsoring people. You know, that's what I heard. I heard program tonight. Okay, and fellowship as well. You know, the 12 steps are the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the recovery program. The fellowship is the fellowship. Fellowship, and they go together as far as I'm concerned. And that's what I heard you talk about tonight, you know? Great share on what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. You know, and I don't know. I think I'm just going to stay because, you know, this damn thing works. And I'll tell you why it works, because I work it. RJ is right, you're right on. It's not for people who want it or need it. It is, and it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. I heard RJ, I heard you talking about it. I do things I don't want to do. I must get out of my comfort zone on a regular basis. This is out of my comfort zone tonight. I didn't want to come out because of the fog. I didn't want to come out because of my breathing in the fog. I didn't know if I was going to make it or not. Okay, the other night at our women's meeting, we talked about faking till you make it. I faked it again another night. Forced myself to get dressed, and here I am. But that's what it's about. Getting out of my comfort zone on a regular basis. Okay, so I am just going to say, I love you, my brother, and I just think I'll stay because it gets greater and greater. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tammy.
Christian.
Hey. All right. My name is Christian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Christian.
And RJ, you're breaking my GNOs right now, man. It's our goals and objectives and paperwork. We do at my house. One of my 12 goals and objectives was just to listen to more meetings and not speak, because I speak all the freaking time. And I'm always shut up. Like my drinking, I'm going to stop. Hey, what the heck? You know, I'm a service, so might as well do it. Working these steps, man, I read the steps all the time when in the meeting room, and I read them, and I'm like, you know, once he says, I know I can do them, because, and maybe I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know I was an alcoholic when I was still drinking, but I always be like, you know, I get it all the time. I just be like, yeah, I don't care. I'm still going to drink. I know I'm an alcoholic. I don't care. I'm an adult, whatever. I know that, yeah, I knew I had a problem, but I just kept doing it. I see all the steps, and I'm like, you know what, if I can do this one, I can do them all. I can't get past step two. I've been borderline atheistic Nazi since I was 14 years old. And I don't know what part of the big book it says. I haven't gotten that far, I got up to like a couple pages past chapter 4 via the Gnostics, and I think it was in that chapter where it said, some of us have not turned to religion because of the experiences we've had with other people in churches. And I've had a lot of bad experiences with people in churches. The one that stood out to me the most was I was about 13 years old, maybe 14, somewhere around there. And we were in the youth class, and the lady, the teacher of the youth class, said that God doesn't want you, think of yourself as a hot drink, besides a drink. God doesn't want a cold, lukewarm drink. God wants a nice hot tea. And I was a hot drink. If you're lukewarm, you're cold, God's going to spit you right out. And I was like, okay, I get that. And then she said, continue on to say that, you know, if you don't go to church, you don't follow the Bible, you don't do any of this stuff, you go to hell. And I was just like, 13 years old, when I was growing up, I questioned everything. I literally questioned everything. And, I, you know, God created you, God gave you a brain, your brain thinks, you think, when you think stuff, you question stuff. So isn't that God's way? And I told her, I was like, well, I got a question about that. I go, what about Buddhist monks? You know, Buddhist monks, where the hell they're at? I go, these people live on their own, they don't do anything to hurt the world, and they don't do any kind of sins that I can think of except for maybe not knowing God or accepting of God, or are they going to hell? And she goes, yes, they're going to hell. And I couldn't accept that. And I stood up, pushed my chair, and I go, well, this isn't for me. And I just walked out. I've had multiple experiences, like I said, in church that have made me not want to believe or go towards belief. And I finally made it into the house after detox, and I did my COVID test. I get in there, and I'm sitting there, and the first class that we have, they do a serenity prayer. And I didn't know what the hell that was. And they're like, okay, we're going to start with a serenity prayer. And I'm like, all right, let's do this. All right, boom. And all of a sudden he goes, God, I'm like, what? I was like, wait a minute. This has to do with this? I'm like, oh crap, I got something. And I know what's made of it. I've been going to like 12 meetings a week. There's 12 meetings a week. Four in, or like six in, six out. And I am still trying to accept what I think or feel or know or understand as a higher power of God. And for me, it's really hard. And I think like what Stan said best, you know, we gotta get out of our comfort zone. And that's what I'm trying to do with that second step. Because I know once I work that second step, I get past that second step, I know I can work the rest. Very, I don't want to say easily, but with more ease than what I can do with step two. And that's what's getting right now is, and that's one of the reasons why, like, with Jeremy here, he's like, no, you need to get back to that workbook. You need to get back to that workbook. And then finally one day I sat down and started working again. He's like, yeah, that's what I want to see right there. And I started working it, and then I got distracted by something because I've had ADD since I was a kid, and every time something pops up in my head, I think, well, I'm going to prepare the news a little bit. And I close the book, and I go, I'll prepare my brother, actually. I'm going to do this. And I went off, and I do that one thing, and I'm like, oh, I do this thing. And I just keep moving on. And that's one reason I quit reading. I stopped reading the book, stopped reading it, because I get that second step. What is it? It's same sort of accepting on a higher power. You know, I have to use you means you got the sanity. And I'm just like, the hell is a higher power? What is this? What is my higher power? And you hear all these things. You hear, oh, your higher power can be a doorknob. Mm-hmm. Your higher power can be these people. Your higher power can be that. And I'm just like, I think my higher power is my son. I have two little girls. They're one's a teenager, one's a preteen, but they're really into mom. Now, when they were younger, I was a stay-at-home dad, and they were all about, you know, they're all about it. They love family, loving out. Now, the preteens, they were in Nebraska for the summer with grandma, and they made a bunch of friends. And when we got there, introduced mom to all their friends. But when I got to meet her, like, you stay over there. Don't go near side of our friends. You don't want to be embarrassed. So my kids are my higher power, but I feel like my son is more, if I was to say that he and my kids are that, he'd be my boy, because he's my only boy. He's the only one who, he's seen drunk, but he doesn't understand what it's about. My daughter is due, they've seen me at my worst. And I don't want him to be like this. I don't want him to be like me. And, you know, they say when you do, when you run this program, you do it for yourself. So that you can do things for your family and be there for your family. And I know I need to do this for myself. And that's the key to it, for yourself. But I'm doing this for him. I'm really doing this for him, because I don't want him to be like me or any of my other family members. I'm like you. I smoke weeds, but I've never done anything else in my life. I've never snorted coke. I've never even seen heroin. I can't even tell you what all that stuff looks like. I've never seen shrooms. I've never been around PCP. I've never seen any of this stuff. I've seen coke once. One time. And I was like, what the hell is this? Looks like freaking sugar. All right, whatever. But trying to break that cycle. Luckily, my two sisters, my sister Cherry and my sister Autumn, they drank a little bit, and they... My little sister's never smoked weed, never done anything else. And my other sister, she smoked weed a little bit. But other than that, they're not addicts, they're not alcoholics. And I'm just trying to break that family cycle. Trying to stop it before it gets that far. And that's pretty much what I got. And I might as well start rambling. So, if you say it to us, I'll take another 24.
Thanks, Christian.
Hey, call me.
Colleen, alcoholic.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I'll be quick so the kids aren't too loud. But I'm glad to be here, RJ. It was great to hear you speak. Like what Sammy said, you know, like a lot of your story just shows how much this program can do for someone, you know, if you actually work it and make that effort and do what is suggested and what is written and what the people who came before us do and tell us to do, you know. And I'm so grateful for this program and for sobriety, and you know, another testament to do it, working and doing the program. And you didn't really, I don't think you shared this really, but like a lot of people we got sober with, and including your first sponsor, those people aren't sober anymore, you know, and you still are, and we still are, and, you know, this, you and I both have seen, you've lost a lot of people to this disease over the years, you know, and really, I don't know why some people get it and some people don't, but I mean, I do know that people that do get it are the people that are working it and doing it, you know, and not falling back on what they're doing or resting on, you know. I love when you say, you know, you can't stay warm on yesterday's fire, because it's so true, you know. It's a one day at a time. It's a daily reprieve, you know, and I've seen through other people, you know, what happens when you get lax on it, or you don't, you know, you stop doing what we're supposed to be doing, and, you know, or, you know, things get good and you think, oh, my life is better now, you know, I don't have to do these things anymore, I'm cured. And so I just appreciate that you really made a point to share that, about how important it is to work all 12 steps, to actually be able to say you tried the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, to continue to work those steps and continue to work with others and, you know, have some sort of a contact with a higher power and be in service and, you know, go to meetings. There's all these different facets of the program that, when done all together, can create this beautiful life.
Mommy, Daddy.
Yes, there's Daddy. So anyway, I am grateful to be here. Glad to get to hear you share and go down memory lane. It's good to see everyone there. I'm so grateful that we could do this over Zoom and get to still participate. So thank you for having me. And hi there. Hi, Chris. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's good to see you all, and thanks for letting me share.
Let's go with bear, as in rawr.
I'm here on the right
here. Hey, bear.
Thanks for sharing with us, RJ. You're right, I'm here with police and talking.
Some cases worse than others.
I have to preface the fact that there was one time when I was really in my program where I sat down in a meeting in this old park. He must have been a whole 60 years old, maybe older, sat down beside me. And he looked at me and said, "Young man, what you need to do is you need to find God." And I was ready to take his comment about God and do something else with it. It really pissed me off at first, but what I heard and what I believe the people said is for us to find a higher power of our understanding. Now, if somebody picks a doorknob, I would suggest not to, because the doorknob is going to turn on. I would suggest that some people use the boot. It's not too bad. But the worst part about it, and I've noticed it through my sobriety years, that those that somehow or another sponsor themselves have been a fool for a sponsor. I've had the opportunity and the blessing of having a sponsor, my fourth sponsor, who was an old fart, 80-some years old, had well over 55 years of sobriety, and his sponsor was Dr. Bob. Wow. And that son of a bitch showed me some things about how to stay sober, which just allowed me the opportunity to stay sober for a few 24 hours and for me to do things in service. I'd pick up my daughter to the meeting, take my wife to the meeting, take anybody that would want to go to a meeting, secretary, coffee room, treasurer, you name it, I've done it, and I still do it. I don't let up. I try my best to do what I can to help another alcoholic. But I got news for you, folks. I won't help you if you don't want to help yourself. There's that old saying, when you get on board a plane and they do that emergency kit, where they say that when the oxygen mask comes down, you need to put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help others. Well, I've had to put the oxygen mask on myself, but I also, for those that I sponsor, they better goddamn have a oxygen mask and put it on themselves. Because I can't keep anybody sober. I work with the God of my understanding, which is for me. And for my sobriety, I don't count on anybody but God and the God of my understanding. My higher power, spirit of the universe. You know, I heard an old guy down to Ashby one time. He passed away a couple of years ago. And he always said, you know, he says, "I don't care what you call your God. You can call your God Allah. You can call your God Buddha. You can call your God Jesus. You can call your God whatever you want to call, but call your God often." And that's what I've been doing. And I sure appreciate the share, RJ. You know what? I got the feeling that you're probably going to stay sober over the next couple of hours. Well, I'll pass it over. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. So weird. It's like Southern California, all they do is clap after shares. When I came to Central California, and then they never
And then, yeah, just came over a town over to Visalia, and then the traffic's like, it's crazy. Like, I remember my first meeting in Hanford, I got, after somebody shared, I was like, just kidding. Let's go with Jamie.
I realized that,
I still didn't change the behavior, you know. I was running on self-building, you know, and in and out of the program, had a little bit of sobriety, went back out, and, you know, it sucked because, I had a nephew with AA, and I needed a body full of food, so it's not sick, you know, and, yeah, it shut my drinking up, you know, my little, short stay in AA, you know, because I knew what was going on, you know, and I took the shame and that I carried along with it, and, you know, it finally took some willingness to, you know, reach the point of desperation, and, you know, thank God that I didn't have to put a message to that decision. I mean, I had surrendered out here, and, you know, I was going to this, and I was finally doing what I was living, and, I was more than sane. You know, I was either going to lose my mind, die out here, go back to kind of old souls with the end result. And, you know, I became willing, and I never followed back to AA, and getting busy, and finally learned how to learn something about rigorous honesty, you know, and get honest, you know, and I don't think the key is that honesty of willingness and willingness, you know, I had to use that, you know, how like, I thought I was doing it, you know, like I was praying to my higher power, and I'd always only used to pray when I need help, or take me out of this one, I swear to God, you know, I would be so silly, you know what I mean, you are a judge, I'll be the program, looking at your folks, they're all with you, you're my ass, 4 years, I don't want to talk to this forever. And then, you know, I would get a break and then time to go, and I was like, man, hold on. it's funny because if you surrender, you know, when you surrender, it's like, I'm done. You know, I use the dominance to surrender, but, you know, I was like, anymore, I was like, you know, yeah, I got to surrender. But then, you know, my life started getting better, I would get a job, you know, and even then I would start taking my rule back, you know, that flag, I would start tearing it back to my feet, you know, pretty soon, I'm working the program backwards, I quit going to meetings, I quit, you know, getting around with fellowship, and I quit on meetings, and then I'm just going to self-will, and I'm back out. I'm just really grateful for those experiences, you know. If I had to go through that to learn, you know, I'm a hard-headed person, and, you know, this time around, something was different, you know. This time, like I said, I became really a house sponsor, and, you know, I'm really thankful with all people that told me, you know, I'm not your relationship person, I'm not going to tell you who's going to get a job, or whatever, you know, we have a new year's appointment, yeah. And until you find him, until God steps in, like, get out the way. And that's basically what he told me. And I hear a lot of that in the spirit of the fourth step. I was so afraid that, like, I would do the one, two, and I would do three, go back out, you know? It's funny because the God thing, you know, I heard something in a meeting, you know, like, when you hear the word God, like, oh, God. One person, like, with a higher power, it made really a lot of sense to me. It was like, if you don't believe in God or higher powers, believe in love. You know what I mean? And that you choose love as a higher power. You know, and it made it real simple because I looked at it again and like, okay, what's the definition of love? You know what I mean? It's you know, unconditional patient and all those other words, and love is an action word too. You know, but yeah, that made a lot of sense. You know, and I like what it says in the big book because it says deep down in every person, there's deep down there's a fundamental idea of God. Each person, you know, that they should encounter. You know, and I like what this guy said, you know, so whatever kind of power you choose, you know, make sure it's awesome. You know, and I just thank God that from my trials and tribulations that I went through, the experiences that I had to go through, you know, and through the steps of AA as sponsorship and the triangle, you know, the steps of recovery and service, you know, service is a concept and unity is a tradition, you know, and there's more of this, you know, and I love it because more will be revealed. So I went, I've been my steps, I'm going through the tradition with my sponsor, you know what I mean? And then I sponsor a couple of people, and it's great. I like to see when I'm helping other alcoholics that light comes on. You know what I mean? That's my joy. I get to see people be recovered and get out of that darkness, you know, and don't have to live that way. You know, but yeah, there's more to this, and more to be revealed, and I love the immense part, you know, I'm really scary, you know, and I've still got some amends to make, but it's always nice timing, and that's for the dream of those two. You know, I'm just going to figure out, I think I could grab one and I'm going to take one of those stories and come back.
Sometimes figure that out.
And then once I figure it out, then shit changes, and I have to figure it out some other ways. But, you know, it is nice, and I, you know, always appreciate your shares, your talks. And it's just nice to know that you're not a village.
That's a good shot.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Hey, I'm afraid that we are just out of time. The Valley Group encourages sponsors.